Scott Woodward returns home to Baton Rouge. The LSU baseball team gearing up for a midweek contest at home at Alex Box Stadium tonight against the visiting Lamar Cardinals. And former LSU star Odell Beckham Jr. had himself quite a rant about his former team this morning. All that and much more coming up on this edition of the Jordy Holberg Show with your guest host, Raymond Parsha III, a.k.a. RP3, today on Tuesday, April the 23rd.
To Galloway, three-point shot, up, back rim no good, high in the air to Brown, swing it over to Mirotić, pops the three, good from the left corner. Nikola Mirotić will make it 120-92. James Harden driving, knocked away by O'Neal and Stolen. Alley-oop to Donovan, he dunked it. They did it again. They ran another alley-oop in the fourth quarter. The youthful ignorance of Royce O'Neal and Donovan Mitchell, but it worked this time.
And this ball hit well to right field. Reddick going back. He's turned around, leaps at the wall. Did he hang on to it? He bangs into the wall, it's in the seats for a home run. Reddick did a full pirouette. He smashed into the fence. He came to earth, and it looked for all the world like he might have the ball in his glove. He did not, and it's a home run, Jorge Polanco, and it's 9-5.
Go Tigers.
Good afternoon, Acadiana. I am your guest host, Raymond Parsha III from RP3 and Company, filling in for Uncle Jordy on this terrific Tuesday afternoon here on 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, as always, 337-706-0111. Once again, that number to call is 337-706-0111. We got a lot to get to in only 2 hours of airtime. So we'll begin with the top story of the day. Scott Woodward has returned home, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. The BR native who went to high school right there in Baton Rouge, who was part of the LSU program, learned the ropes, so to speak, on how to be an administrator. He then left his home state, where he loves fishing, hunting, eating gumbo, all the other things associated with the state of Louisiana this man encompasses. And he followed one of his mentors, went to Washington, where he became athletic director, had a terrific hire where he poached Chris Peterson away from the Boise State program to help lead his football team there, then made the transition closer to home, one state away in College Station, where he became the athletic director there at Texas A&M, where he made not one but two sensational big-time hires. First of all, hiring Jimbo Fisher, something Joe Oliva was unable to do at LSU, bringing him into College Station, and then recently signing Buzz Williams as the new head men's basketball coach. The presser was today. It was a jam-packed affair, as you can imagine. They're at the Manship School, where they held the impromptu press conference today, introducing the new athletic director and the man in charge of taking over the LSU athletic department, but leading it into the future. And for Scott Woodward, this was a call that's an easy one for him to make. It was an easy decision for him to make. You know, people asked him, you know, hey, you know, you had a good job there at A&M. You just made two sensational hires. You know, why would you come back? And for him, it was a call that he just couldn't say no to.
This was LSU's process, and I'm happy about it and happy for it and happy I'm here today. And you and I will have plenty of time on the radio to talk about a lot of things, and that, we'll do it at the appropriate time. But, you know, why I stated in my statements, it's a passion. It's a love affair. And it's the same love affair that thousands and thousands of people in this state have. And to have an opportunity to be a steward of this great place is just something that I have to pinch myself in the morning about. And, you know, I get emotional and I think about it, but it is so, so important to do it right and to do with integrity. And back to your question is it, it was easy. You know, it was a call I couldn't say no to.
Scott would further go on to say, you know, he covered a lot of ground. I give him props because he quoted Thomas Wolfe and then also name-checked Buddy Romer in the same press conference, which impressed me immensely. But he talked about how much being part, once again, of the purple and gold and what that means to him.
I'm not solely back at LSU because it's my alma mater. I did not return because this is home to me and my entire multi-generational family. And I'm not, and I did not come back because of the pull of any one individual. I am at LSU because I believe in who we are and what we can accomplish together, and I stress together. And because LSU means so much to me and it means so much to many people here in this great state.
Scott Woodard. Introductory press conference was earlier today. He was asked about a slew of different topics, and one of the things that came up was what are some of the first things that he's going to do. Look, he's walking into a situation that he doesn't really have any big hires to have to worry about. Ed O is locked up as the head coach of the football program. Will Wade was just reinstated. He doesn't even have to testify at that trial now. So it appears that he's secure as of right now. Now, that could change, obviously. But you got Paul Maneri. He's locked up as the baseball coach, softball team, everything. There's not a real job that he has to worry about filling immediately. But that being said, that does not mean that there isn't work to be done right off the bat. Here are some of the first steps that he said he has as the new athletic director at LSU.
First and foremost, and I've used this before and I've said it before, doctors take a Hippocratic oath, and part of that is first do no harm. And that's what we have to do to this incredible institution is, look, we're not going to screw up traditions. We're not going to go about changing things radically. I'm going to listen, and I'm going to talk to people, and we're going to make things to figure out how to continue this success and even how to take it to new and greater levels, because you can always do that here. And so I'll do a lot of listening, you know, and you'll hear all my stupid cliches and metaphors, I'm warning you. But, you know, one of my favorites is, you know, God gave you two ears and one mouth, and so I'm going to do a lot of listening.
Scott Woodard says he's going to do a lot of listening. One of the other things that he proclaimed today with confidence was he understands that LSU is a football school first and foremost, and then baseball right behind it, and then probably basketball if we're being honest with the pecking order when it comes to the Bayou Bengals. But he said this, his aspirations is to have a high standard across the board for athletics.
Without sounding arrogant, that my actions speak louder than words, you know, from my time at University of Washington and my 3 years at A&M, is that all sports matter to me. They're like children. And, you know, obviously your two revenue sports, really three here, mean more from a revenue standpoint because they're the goose laying the golden egg. And it's important to have that engine driving all that so we can do great things in our non-revenue sports. But, you know, it's a love affair. It's just like your children. They do different things, and they have different skill sets. But, you know, I am going to focus with, you know, our administration and athletic department on that as well as our other sports. And there will be plenty of access and plenty of things to celebrate because it's been important to what we do. You remember my boss, Mark Emmert, saying that we want to be great in physics and football and everything in between. And that's what these folks attracted me to. That's what King's vision is. And that's what this is about. And any way I can help, I'm going to do it. And the non-revenue sports are part of that, Jock.
Now, Scott Woodard asks, answering, I do believe, Jacques Doucet's question on about all the different sports and what's going to be a priority from today's press conference held earlier at the Manship School there on campus at LSU. He also, I found, had a very interesting take on what his role is going to be, his leadership role is going to be within the athletic department and for the university.
I view this job more like an executive producer instead of an autocratic leader. You know, I used to tease Skip all the time when I was here giving him advice. I said, Skip, we can't make personnel decisions this way. You know, we have to really go through this and be thoughtful about it. Not that he wasn't. I was just teasing him, of course. But it's just collaboration. It's transparency. It's just basic, simple things in life that you have to do, that you have to be successful.
Scott Woodard, by the way, Skip Bertman was in attendance, so I love that he does that little joke there during the press conference while Skip is in attendance in the jam-packed event there, introducing Scott Woodard as the new athletic director for LSU. I want to hear from you guys. We're going to go to break, but I want to hear from you guys. Call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We'll dive more into LSU's new leader of its athletic department after this break, right here on the Jordy Holberg Show with guest host RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Holberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
I spent last night in the arms of a girl in Louisiana. In the warm out on the highway, my thoughts are...
That's right. Scott Woodward has returned home, ladies and gentlemen, to Baton Rouge. Welcome back to the Jordy Holberg Show with guest host RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111, if you want to tell us your thoughts on the new man in charge of the LSU Athletic Department and your thoughts on what he had to say today. He had a lot to say today. Had a little bit of a brief introduction, and then he fielded several questions from the media, which I loved. That is something that his predecessor wasn't known for doing. And his predecessor, Joe Oliva, was known for kind of just hiding, not really making himself all that available to members of the media and questioning. It was good to see that Scott was out there. Now, look, it's the introductory press conference, so he's going to do that. But he does seem to have a very natural back and forth with the media. Seems to be a little bit more receptive to talking. And he opened up about some things today during the presser that I'd like to touch on. One big complaint from the purple and gold faithful out there has been the lack of the fan experience, particularly for game day at Tiger Stadium. Look, you have a great ace in your back pocket, one of the best sites in all of America for college football. When that crowd is lit, when they are raring to go, they're amped up, liquored up, however you want to describe it, that can be one of the most intimidating places to play in the entire country. The problem is, for a lot of people, is that they do not believe that the game day experience is all that great. The game is great because you're inside Tiger Stadium. And a lot of people make the game day experience amazing by camping out and tailgating. But what else is there to do? What is there to do for the families? What is LSU doing to try to combat a trend? It's a very small trend at the big schools. It's far more prominent at the smaller division schools, say like UL or teams in the South and like McNeese in Northwestern State, where you're seeing fan attendance down. And a lot of the smarter programs have embraced this and going, okay, people just aren't coming to games anymore. We need to give them a reason to bring the whole family. We need to give them a reason to spend their hard-earned money to come here, and we're going to give them essentially lanyap, bonus, right? That's what it all comes down to. It's It's one of the things that Scott Woodward talked about today at his press conference when he talked about the fan experience.
To know, people forget, I've been gone 15 years and a lot of things have changed here. And I'll have to rely upon a lot of folks. I saw my friend Brian Sherramy, head of the Tiger Athletic Foundation, and Rick Perry and those guys. And we're going to have to really talk as a department about what is going on. I mean, I've got news for everyone that have just been to Tiger Stadium. We are the envy of the nation, and our experience in is second to none, and they're crazy about it. So here again, I don't want to screw up what's good, but there's always room for improvement. So I'll do a lot of listening, and I'll see how things are going from that standpoint.
He's not wrong there. Once again, he talked about second to none Tiger Stadium, right? It's a huge asset, not only for the football team on the field, it gives them a competitive edge, but also for the athletic department. You have this great diamond, so to speak. What else are you going to do about it? And what else are you going to do with it? Because I saw two electric games last season at Tiger Stadium, the game against Georgia, where they absolutely treated them Bulldogs like they're a redheaded stepchild, okay? And then the Alabama game, which went the other way. But both environments were absolutely electric. How do you build off of that? Because not every game's that way. You're not going to have a top five matchup or a top 10 matchup every Saturday in Tiger Stadium. So how do you improve it to get people to drive from, say, Cairn Crow or New Iberia or Crowley or Opelousas to go to LSU for the game day experience instead of sitting at home? So it seems like he's committed or at least open to listening about how they can do things differently there with the athletic department. He also mentioned this during his presser, what his expectations are for not only the football program, but for all the programs there at LSU.
There are so many great things happening and so much already in place for us to have success across the board. We will win SEC and NCAA championships. We will not only graduate our student athletes, but we will provide them with a world-class experience and with world-class help after they graduate. We will conduct ourselves with integrity, and we will do our small part in elevating this university.
You heard that? He sounded very passionate there, didn't he? He sounded a little fired up about that. He's passionate. Now, look, here's the difference. And Uncle Jordy said this last week on his show when the news broke that it was going to be Scott taking over, or when it broke that Joe Leva was gone and then Jordy started talking about, you know, you need to get a guy into Baton Rouge there in that role that loves the Tigers, that loves the state of Louisiana, that loves Baton Rouge. Because they're going to be more passionate about their role because that's their team. This is Scott's team. This is his university. He's emotionally invested with LSU, so he's going to be more inclined to go to bat. He's going to be more inclined to listen to his fellow purple and gold faithful. He's going to have an open mind, but you can tell, you can just hear the passion in his voice when he was speaking today about that. Even though there's room for improvement, Woodward very much said that this university and this athletic department in Baton Rouge has all the resources it needs.
We have to have resources, and we have to have very, very competitive resources. And we're blessed. We're in the best conference in America, Southeastern Conference, and we have resources here. And people before me, whether it was Joe or Skip, have set a great basis here of where our financial standing is very good. Can we do better? Of course. But we have to be cognizant that you win wars with resources, and that's the most important thing.
He also, revealed that he understands how important this job is. He understands the resources they have there at LSU. He understands that it's going to be his job to do better than the people before him. And he was very respectful to Joe Oliva in today's press conference. He was very very respectful to Skip, who he obviously is very close to as well. But he made sure to make a point in today's presser about doing things the right way.
If we're not rowing this boat in this direction, we're going to get our butts kicked in Tuscaloosa. We're going to get our butts kicked in Opelika. We're going to get our butts kicked in Gainesville. And trust me, I have no intention of doing that. And so I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that we're rowing this thing in the right direction.
First of all, I was not expecting an Opelika reference in today's presser. He's obviously referring to Auburn. But he's right about what he just said. He's got to do things the right way. Now, you can interpret that a little bit about in the right direction. What does he really mean by that? Does he mean keep building on what's been done before? Is that a not-so-subtle shot, so to speak, at Will Wade? About doing things the right way? You know, We'll have to see. Everyone that thinks that Will Wade being reinstated is a slam dunk and he's not going anywhere, look, Scott does not play around. This is the man that fired Kevin Sumlin, who brought a Heisman Trophy to College Station and reinvigorated Texas A&M. He fired Kennedy as the basketball coach. He will make tough decisions, and he will live with them, and he will own them, and he will not hide from them. I found that very interesting. But Scott Woodward back home in Baton Rouge as the athletic director for LSU. You give us a call, give us your thoughts after this break on our co-equipment hotline, 337-706-0111. More Jordy Holberg Show with guest host RP3 after this on 103.7 The Game.
Mark has become a very rich man. He agrees to a five-year, $105.5 million deal.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show with guest host RP3. Right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. I've been spending a lot of time this afternoon talking about the new man in charge there in BR, Scott Woodward. Had his introductory press conference today there at the Manship School on campus at LSU. You give us a call if you'd like. Tell us what you think about the new man in charge. Your thoughts. Call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That said, it's just not all about Mr. Scott. We'll get more back to him when we bring on, from TigerDetails.com, the one and only Ron Higgins will be joining us in the second hour. That'll be at 3:32. Ron will be joining us, he will give us his thoughts on the press conference and the hire in general. Also coming up in the second hour, Andrea Wagspack, the longtime St. Thomas More softball coach, state champion. Her team is back in Sulphur this coming weekend with another chance of trying to capture a state championship. She'll join us at 3:02, so we'll talk to her about that and her team's season. But it is a slam dunk hire from the perspective of this is a guy who has ties to LSU. This is a guy who grew up around inside Tiger Stadium. He bleeds the purple and gold. So from that perspective, if you're an LSU fan, I would assume that you're loving this hire. And you're loving the attitude that he has coming in taking over as athletic director from Joe Oliva. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We got Craig D. on the phone. Craig, how are you this afternoon, brother?
What's going on, Mr. RP3?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. How about yourself, man? What you got to talk about?
Oh man, not only a home run hire, it's Scott Woodward, but that's a grand slam hire. And looking at it, his history of bringing in Fisher and bringing in Peterson and bringing in, you know, Buzz Williams, I heard a rumor somewhere, I don't know if these are floating around, but, you know, Nicky Fargus is going to be looked at hard. And speaking of home run hires, I heard it through the grapevine that they're possibly trying to get Kim Mulkey away from Baylor.
Craig, I'll talk on that because I've heard that rumor before recently, and that's also been in the past as well, right? That's been floated around there for a while, Craig. And for me, I don't think Kim makes the leave. I think for Kim, she was, you know, she bled Bulldog, right? I mean, she's Louisiana Tech through and through, player, All-American, and then a national champion and a national champion as an assistant. That's the job she always wanted. They decided not to give her 5 years. That didn't turn out too well for Louisiana Tech moving forward. But I think she's found a home, and I think she's grateful to Baylor. And even though I think LSU could pony up the dough for it, I think she's settled into place where she's won three national championships. But that said, I do believe you're right about Nikki. And people forget about this, Craig. I remember being inside the PMAC when it was packed and sold out for women's basketball. Okay, with Simone Augustus and Sylvia Fowles. And when people, you can make the argument, they cared more about the women's program than they did about the men's. And they had that great run of Final Fours. I think the football team is trending in the right direction. The baseball team is nationally ranked. It's in the mix for a national championship. The basketball team, the men's side, had a big bounce-back season. The gymnastics team just finished as national runner-up. What's missing? Women's basketball. It's been underperforming, and I don't think he's going to make a move this summer in that regard, but if they underperform again and they keep losing recruits to teams like Baylor, okay, which Kim Mulkey recruits the hell out of Louisiana, if they keep losing recruits to other schools, other Power 5 schools, I could see, and they underperform next year, I could see a change there for the women's basketball program, Craig.
Yeah, I think every sport is safe but Nikki Fargus, and I'm actually hoping you're wrong. I hope they run her before then because we really haven't done anything since Sylvia Fowles and Simone Augustus. You know, I mean, we get talent. I mean, look, Chloe Jackson, she graduated. She went to Baylor, you know, post-senior year. Never played point guard in her life. They said it was like asking a wide receiver to come play quarterback.
That's
and
right.
The MVP of the national championship. So, how can you go to LSU and not do much and yet be the MVP and Baylor for the national title?
You're exactly right, Craig. I appreciate the phone call, and Craig's right. That's a big thing with LSU, and that's something that Scott is going to have to address is the women's basketball program, because I like Nikki, but they have underperformed, okay? And they've underperformed for a couple of things. They have never been the same since Sylvia and Simone left. Van Chancellor kept things going after Pokey for a little while. But he was very much a bridge guy. You knew that when they hired him, that he was not going to be a long-term answer for the LSU women's basketball program. So he was going to be the bridge. Nikki is just underperformed. And the main thing, especially when it comes to women's basketball, you have to keep the players in state. You are LSU. There's no reason why you had another one of Baylor's star players out of New Orleans not be at LSU. She ends up going to Baylor. Then you have one of your own players transfer out, and then she goes and ends up being the national championship game MVP. It's a bad look on the program. It's a bad look for women's basketball there at LSU. Look, if Scott means what he says and says having excellence across the board in all athletics, that they're all his children, then he's not going to be satisfied when one is underperforming and one is about to be held back in school, so to speak. So that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at A&M's programs last year, I think, 12 of 13 programs all made it to postseason play. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and the other thing that impresses me so much, Craig, and I appreciate the phone call, is this is a man who has made just tremendous hires. I go back to the Peterson thing. There were other Power 5 schools that circled around Boise State when they emerged as a national team. When they beat Oklahoma in that Fiesta Bowl, it was game over. All of a sudden, Boise was no longer a fringe team. They became a national team ranked in the top 25. Teams circled around Boise State year after year, but it was Scott that was able to convince Peterson to leave the blue turf of Idaho and go up to Washington and help try to turn things around there in Washington. I want to say after Sark left to go take the USC job. He does tremendous work there. He comes to Texas A&M. Not only does he fire Kevin Sumlin, which some people felt was needed even earlier than what occurred, he does that. And look, Sumlin had built up some goodwill because Sumlin was an offensive guru. He came from Houston, another one of those guys that was a head coach at Houston and then left Houston and got a bigger job. I mean, people forget, they knock on Kevin Sumlin. Kevin Sumlin was able to have Johnny Manziel. They beat Alabama. Okay? Now, they didn't beat LSU. Right? That was the whole thing. They couldn't beat LSU. But they did beat Alabama. They did go to a Cotton Bowl. Johnny won the Heisman. Kevin Sumlin helped make Texas A&M relevant on the national stage, just not in the state of Texas, just not in the region, but in the nation. And when things got tired and when things got stale and too many quarterbacks kept transferring out and they kept piling up losses, what happened to Kevin Sumlin? Thank you for your time. Here you go. And he goes out and he swings big and he gets Jimbo Fisher. Now, obviously, he had already knew Jimbo from their time at LSU together. But Joe Oliva tried to get Jimbo Fisher, not once but twice. And Jimbo took advantage of that. Now, there's conflicting reports there. Some people say that Joe Oliva, his hands were tied when it came to the money to get Jimbo Fisher to come to Baton Rouge. Others say that he just dropped the ball. It's probably a combination of both. But Scott Woodward was able to accomplish something that Joe Oliva was not. He hired Jimbo Fisher. He hired a national championship winning coach as a head coach who also won a national championship as a coordinator at LSU, a man who coached a Heisman Trophy winner in Jameis Winston. And he convinced him to leave Tallahassee. And Florida State is a marquee job. I know their facilities are kind of a dump these days, okay? But that's still a good program. He convinces him to leave Tallahassee to come to College Station. They backed up the truck. They took care of Jimbo, taking care of Jimbo's staff. And sure enough, A&M makes strides. They almost beat Clemson last year. They do beat LSU in controversial fashion in the bazillion overtime game. And now has created a rivalry, a very juicy rivalry between LSU and Texas A&M because they both recruit the same market, Houston. It's a number one priority for both. LSU, obviously, outside of the state of Louisiana. But then he wasn't done. Buzz Williams has been one of the most respected and sought-after coaches in a long time. Buzz Williams was able to turn around Virginia Tech, guys, and have them compete and win in the ACC against the likes of Duke and North Carolina. He got them to the tournament. They won a tournament game. His name was attached to a lot of jobs. Would UCLA go after Buzz Williams? Would all these other jobs, Arkansas, whoever it was? Scott Woodward got Buzz Williams to come to College Station. And Kennedy did a nice job there. He started having some health issues and the program dipped a little bit. But he got rid of him. Brought in Buzz Williams. This guy in a short period of time as a man who's ran the show for athletic departments with the Huskies at Washington and with the Aggies at A&M, has proven to get results. He's proven to get the coaches that he wants. And the big complaint that I've heard over and over again from LSU fans is, why are we settling? That's the biggest thing I always hear from LSU fans. They feel like they settled for Ed Orgeron. They feel like they were constantly settling. That LSU is a national program. Why in the hell are we settling for a guy who was the worst coach in the SEC for the entire decade that he was coaching in at Ole Miss? A guy that was the interim coach. Why are we settling for him? Well, the reason why you had to settle for Ed Orgeron is because the previous athletic director mismanaged how to do things. If Joe Leva would have got rid of Les Miles when he wanted to, let him be carried off the field there at Tiger Stadium, victorious, then you could have had the coaching hire that you wanted. You could have made a splash. You didn't. And Joe Leva got played by Jimbo Fisher. Joe Leva got played by Tom Herman. Tom Herman was never going to become the Baton Rouge guys. He always wanted that Texas job. And he got played over and over again. And the diehard LSU fans were angry and upset that their program had to settle for coaching hires. This cat right here, he's not going to settle. He's going to target who he wants to target, and he's proven to get the guy that he wants over and over again. Expect the same now there in Baton Rouge. Great call by Craig. Thank you for calling the ARCO Equipment Hotline, Craig. When we come back here on the Jordy Holtberg Show with your guest host, RP3, we'll talk, I guess we'll talk more LSU, Clint. Is that what we're going to do? Possibly. The world famous is just giving me the heads up. He's not used to having the back and forth through the glass. I've thrown him off today.
Yeah, I'm not used to it. I mean, after all, we have Jordy. He's usually at his palatial studio apartment, I guess.
The compound. The compound and BR.
And then also when Ben Love's out on his seemingly never-ending BLT, seemingly never-expanding BLT.
My man is already throwing shade to his boy.
It's not throwing shade.
Time yet.
It's not even throwing shade. It's just stating facts, you know. it gets a little lonely in here sometimes.
That's what I'm here for, Clint. As long as you don't hug me, we'll be okay.
I think we're okay.
We'll keep it going. We'll talk a little LSU baseball when we come back here on 103.7 The Game.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show. I am your guest host, the bald bomber, RP3, filling in for the blonde bomber here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live this afternoon from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've been talking LSU heavy, new athletic director. That is the news of the day. Scott Woodward has come home back to BR to take over as the head man in charge there of the athletic department. But I want to wrap up this hour talking a little bit about LSU baseball. After having about a week or so of so-so performance on the diamond, including the opener last week, Thursday, because of the Easter weekend against Florida, where they got roughed up a little bit, they turned things around, took 2 of 3, won the series against Florida, who at that time was ranked number 25 in the country. And the bats just exploded, and they are going to try to build off of that momentum with this midweek game, as the world-famous Clint D. said, the CD, said it's going to be Marceau's going to take the bump for LSU tonight. That's been announced. And they're going to welcome there to Alex Box Stadium a team that they have some familiarity with, because former LSU player and longtime assistant coach Will Davis is the head coach of the Lamar Cardinals. He was a catcher, if you remember right, for LSU from 2004 to 07, and then he worked as an assistant under Paul Maneri from 2008 to 15. He's in his third season at the helm of the Lamar program. The problem is Lamar is not very good. When I say not very good, I mean they're terrible. 14-26. I'll say it again. 14-26. Them fighting Tigers, meanwhile, are 26-15 now and number 9 ranked team in the country. Lamar has struggled all year. They have a couple of good bats, guys, that you need to keep an eye on. J.C. Carrera is hitting .315 with a team-high 5 homers and 29 RBIs. And senior infielder Robin Adams leads the club in home runs with 6 and is second on the team in RBI. So they have 2 pretty good hitters. Scoring is not Lamar's issue. It's that, is that pitching? They bat a decent .279 as a team, but it's the pitching staff that is struggling. ERA of 5.03. The way LSU hit the ball against Florida, the last half of the first game on Thursday and those other 2 games on Friday, Saturday, this should be a 27-2 kind of game if they hit like they did against Florida against poor Lamar. This is what Paul had to say. I'm really proud of the way our guys came together last weekend and won the series over Florida, and I think it gives our team more confidence going forward. Now our focus shifts to Lamar, and it seems like it's been a while since we won a midweek game. That is the truth. These games are important because they affect your RPI, but they're also difficult to play in between SEC weekend series where our players expend so much effort and emotion. We're going to do everything we can to win Tuesday night and keep our momentum going. Like we said before, Landon Marceau, who has struggled. Remember, Marceau, the true freshman, was slotted in as the Saturday starter in preseason. There was a lot of buildup for that. There was a lot of talk of him taking over and being that Saturday starter. It hasn't worked out that way. Landon has struggled a little bit. 1-2 overall on the season, an ERA of north of 8 in only 20 innings of pitch. He'll go against the sophomore right-hander Jack Dallas, who's had just as bad of a season for Lamar, 0-4 with an ERA of 6.04. Surprisingly, LSU leads the all-time series with Lamar 7-6. Including last season's 8-0 victory for the Tigers over the Cardinals in Baton Rouge. This will mark the 8th straight season in which LSU and Lamar have met on the diamond, which is nice. LSU has won 6 of the previous 7 meetings this decade. The Cardinals, when that span came back in 2016 in Beaumont, when Lamar posted a surprising 12-11 victory. You can listen to the game live right here tonight on 103.7 The Game. The good brother Ben Love is going to lead you up to pregame from 4 to 6 right after the Jordy Holberg show. Ben Love will take you 4 to 6. That'll be the start of pregame, first pitch around 6:30. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. So we'll see. Lopsided matchup on paper, but we'll see if LSU can pull it out. Look, the midweek game really doesn't mean all that much to them, but it would be nice, especially for Landon Marceau, a guy that had such high expectations to be an anchor, one of the anchors of this rotation, if he could turn things around and kind of build up his confidence heading into the home stretch of the season. That's going to do it for the first hour of the Jordy Holberg Show. Second hour coming up, going to talk a little high school softball with STM coach Wagspack right here on 103.7 The Game.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Welcome to the second hour of the Jordy Hultberg Show with your guest host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 2-3 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We spent the first hour of today's show talking all things LSU, as expected. New athletic director held his introduction press conference there at the Manship School today. Scott Woodward introduced himself, fielded questions from the media. We spent the majority of the first hour talking about that, and then we also touched on LSU baseball returning to action at Alex Box Stadium tonight versus Lamar. Second hour, though, we're going to carve out some time here, rightfully so, for high school softball. That's right, high school softball, ladies and gentlemen. It's big here in the area, and the state championships are, in fact, this Friday. Semifinal games will be Friday. State championships will be Saturday. That's a little bit of a change to the schedule. Traditionally, when you got to the Fast Pitch 56, it was always the quarterfinal games on the Friday, fast and furious all day long from start to finish, and then Saturday was your semifinal games in the morning, and then after midday, you'd play your state championships throughout the night. Our next guest knows plenty about what it takes to get there. She's the longtime head softball coach at St. Thomas More. She has won four state championships as the head coach of the Cougars in 07, 09, and then back-to-back in 2013 and 14. And once again, she has STM back there with a chance to bring home some more hardware. The six-seed STM will take on two-seed Archbishop Hannah on Friday at 11 a.m. on Field 16 there at Frash Park. It's our privilege to welcome to the program the longtime head coach of the STM softball program, Andrea Wagspack. Coach, how are you doing today, and congratulations on getting back to Sulphur.
Oh, man, thank you so much. It's an honor to be on the show and get to talk about some of the softball around the area. We have some great softball down here, and my program is super excited about getting to head back to Sulphur. It'll be the last time the select schools are out in Sulphur, so it's kind of a special time and a special time to make it. So we're hoping that we can win that last select school Division II state championship over there on Saturday.
Coach, talk a little bit about that. I mean, your team has been a perennial state powerhouse in recent years under your watch there. What does it mean to you for this year's team? I know you guys entered the tourney as a six seed, a little bit lower than traditionally that you guys have been in there. But you make a statement in the opening round, 12-0 over Vanderbilt Catholic, and then you upset the three-seed Haynes Academy 9-3 there over the weekend to punch your ticket to Sulphur. So what does it mean for you for this being the last year and everything like that, and kind of the road that your team has been forced to take?
Well, you know, I think our road and what we've done in upseeding the three-seed Haynes Academy was a really solid ball club. My girls we're really on an uptick right now. We've been playing well. We've actually had an opportunity to have several days of practice in a row. We have at STM, we have 50% of my team plays another sport. And so I actually don't get all my kids until after we started playing games already. So, we're finally seeing some meshing together here at the end of the season, when we actually have some days in a row to practice. And my kids have just been working hard, and they're fighters. I have some competitors in this group. And it means a lot for us that we get to be in Frosh Park this last year for the select schools. Every year is a different journey. Every year is a little different. But I'm telling you, I've got a group of fighters. We're young. We got only two seniors in this group. But that sophomore group for us has been just super competitive and been able to ignite us and really get us moving in the right direction here late in the season.
Coach, STM has had a tremendous amount of success since the turn of the century. They've won seven state championships in softball, four under your watch. But I know, talking to you a little bit, that you know there were some fears there only a few years ago about the amount of kids on the roster, that you had some low numbers, you had a dip, it just cycled through that way. But how fearful were you a few years ago that you know, maybe you wouldn't be able to keep this, you know, this great success going due to a lack of numbers.
We were extremely fearful. As a matter of fact, we started doing stuff in the summer to keep our feeder school kids interested in softball. You know, the way that all the travel and all the club stuff is going nowadays and trending, kids are picking one thing at a young age. And so we were really seeing that in our feeder schools. Our feeder schools actually quit playing for several years. And that's when we saw that big drop off. I think, in 2017, that we had 13 kids. I mean, I was extremely fearful, and then we were graduating a bunch. You know, so we really tried hard and worked hard in the summertime to offer camps and clinics and get kids playing again and get them interested and work around their all these other things that are going on and show them that it's possible. You know, you got to be willing to compromise. These are kids. And you know, when they're picking sports when they're 10, 11, and 12, I feel like we're really stunning their growth as people, as athletes. You know, and it's unfortunate that that's happening, but it's happening more and more across the board. And I think in all sports, we're seeing that a lot more. But there was a time when I really thought we may not have softball at SCM at all. I wasn't sure that we would actually have the numbers, much less stay competitive. But just doing that hard work in the summer and keeping kids playing and showing them that they can do more than just one thing and allowing that, being willing to compromise with that, has really helped our numbers to grow again. And hopefully we can keep that going and keep moving in that direction and keep the program competitive.
Coach, you know, obviously another low point despite the numbers was that, you know, the down year in 2017 where it was the first losing record since 97, but you guys still won a playoff game, but then that was the big rebound last year, right, where you guys won your first outright district championship in 4 years. You advance back to the state tournament, and you guys go toe-to-toe with defending champion Parkview Baptist in a game that you ended up losing in the D2 semis 12-10. How were you able to do such a quick turnaround there? I know you're a veteran coach. You know how to cultivate these relationships with these kids and win championships, but how were you guys able to turn it around so quickly from 17 to 18?
Well, I think in 2018, my pitching staff, that 2017, we had a major injury to one of our current senior pitchers. At the time, she was a sophomore. She was anticipated to be our number one at the time. And just a freak accident in the weight room, tore labrum in her non-pitching shoulder, just sent us all out of whack. And so Peyton DeZarmo really had to step up, and she was a lone soldier on the mound and really had never had to carry a team. So, you know, 2017, that was rough going. And but she needed to go through that. Our team needed to go through that to know that she can survive, and she's a fighter. And that experience made her and our other pitcher, Emily Landry, closer. They were extremely competitive together. They pushed each other. And not only that, we had a large freshman crew, that little group that was working in the summer. We had, I think 10 or 12 freshmen come in that were just competitors and pushed everybody to be a little bit better. And so for a coach, when you have that competition going on at practice, it makes your job a little bit easier. I mean, everybody's competing to start. Everybody wants to win. But the growth of that circle, the kids in the circle with Peyton and Emily, their junior year was just huge. You know, and anybody that's in high school softball knows when you're strong in the circle, your team's going to be strong and hard to beat. And so those two really balance each other out well, and they just push each other to be better. And Peyton going through that rough patch in 17, having to be the lone soldier in the circle, made her 10 times better competitor, and she really learned how to fight.
Coach, you hinted at it earlier in our conversation that you got a fairly young team, right? Only two seniors and only two juniors.
Yeah.
You're primarily made up of sophomores.
Yes.
How impressed have you been with the fact that you have such a young team, but yet they've come together like they did last year and continue to do so this year?
I think what we've done and what they've done as a group speaks for itself. And like I said, you know, a lot of that sophomore group, they play basketball, soccer. I got cheerleaders in there, and they show up. And look, when I tell you we start playing, the minute they're there, they start playing the next day, that's what we're doing. You know, and that just goes to show you their grit, because I'm sure they're exhausted and they're tired, and they come right back to softball season, and they refocus and they get locked in. And it's hard. Together, I think I counted the other day, all together, during the softball season, we had 10 practices where we had all of our kids all together. And when you're talking about a six-week span, you know, everybody knows how technical and fundamental softball is, just with hitting and fielding and all throwing the right way, all those mechanical things. So for these kids to get refocused and locked in and really perform well on the softball field speaks volumes about their character, about their competitiveness, and who they are and what they want. And so they're pursuing that goal and that dream. They have big dreams of going to Sulphur and being there, and they just didn't want to be denied. And so when we had that opportunity to practice, they really is locked in and focused. And I think, you know, what we've done in terms of, I'm not a real big stat person, but what we've done in terms of wins and losses and where we are as a team, it speaks for itself. And so that group has just been, the competitiveness, we haven't had that in a long time. My two twins, my two juniors, they're twins. And those two, too, they're overly competitive sometimes. But, you know, that they bring that fire, and that sophomore group just, they love to compete, man. And they are, they really lifted the level of play.
We're talking to STM head softball coach Andre Wagaspak. Coach, let's talk about your opponent come Friday, Archbishop Hanna. What do you know about them? Yeah. What kind of challenges do they present your Cougars?
Well, they're coached by a veteran coach. Coach Becky Lambert's been around the game for a long time. She was a collegiate player, knows the game well. They're always well-coached and well-disciplined. Hannon's a perennial team in the playoffs year in and year out, and they're always competing. They have they're very young. They're very similar to us. They play a lot of sophomores. They got a couple juniors in there. There's one, maybe two seniors that really contribute. And they're like us. They go by that circle. And so they have two pitchers as well. One that is more their starting kid, throws it upper 50s. And we actually faced them earlier in the year. We didn't play so well. Hopefully they play a little bit better this time around. But they, you leave it down the middle of the plate. They're super aggressive at the plate. We have to make sure that we do a good job of making those basic plays and not giving anything extra. But they have a great pitcher. She's got good movement on the ball. She spins the ball well. Good screwball, good curve. She can throw it up in the zone. So we just have to be disciplined, you know. We hit those balls down and on the white and challenge their defense. You know, we're fortunate that we have some speed this year. We can cause some chaos. So hopefully that's our goal, cause a little chaos, make them play defense and, you know, see where those chips fall where they may, and hopefully we can get to 21 outs before they do. So that's the plan.
Coach, I appreciate you making some time for us. I know you're immensely busy, especially with the preparation this week. But best of luck to you and your team this Friday. And congratulations on the great season and getting back to Sulphur. And we'll be rooting for you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all. Have a good day.
You too, Coach. Longtime STM softball coach Andrea Wagaspak right there joining us here on the Jordy Holtberg Show, breaking down her team. They're back in Sulphur. They only got to win two games. Bring home that state championship. It would be the fifth under her. Come back, talk a little Odell Beckham Jr. He had himself quite the day earlier on the Twitter. We'll dive into that right here on the Jordy Holtberg Show with guest host Raymond Parse III, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show. I am your guest host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you like, 337-706-0111. Coming up at 3:32 from TigerDetails.com, one of the more respected sports journalists in the state, Ron Higgins, will be joining us, give us his thoughts about the introductory press conference by Scott Woodward today there at LSU. But before we get to that, it's that time of the day for some hot topics.
Here's today's hot topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Man, it's a little weird, you know? Like I said, this is kind of where RP3 kind of got his start here on 103.7 The Game.
That's right. Guest hosting.
Back
Uncle
in
Jordy. That's right.
Back in the host chair. It feels like 3 hours isn't nearly enough. But we got to start.
Oh, I'm
things
giving
on
the people 5 hours today.
Yeah.
I hope they like me.
Oh, yeah. I think they will, especially after a gap in time to where we're able to have like fresh new content.
There we go.
To break out to you on this Tuesday afternoon. And of course, one of the things you talked about was Odell Beckham Jr. and his tirade. My goodness, is this just a mess going on right now? And Cleveland doesn't know what they got themselves into?
Cleveland made the deal knowing exactly what they were getting into.
I hope so.
But they were banking on Odell being paired up with his man, like one of his best friends, Jarvis Landry, former LSU Tiger himself. Okay. And thinking that would help it. Look, Cleveland made a decision based on talent, not based on social media headache. World famous. That's what they did. And look, but this is the thing about Odell Beckham. Look, let's be clear. OBJ's never beat up anybody. He's never sexually assaulted any woman. He's never beat up a woman that we know of. Okay. He's never done any of that kind of nefarious stuff that has been associated with a lot of guys in the NFL in recent years, or at least have come to light, right? But he just has those diva characteristics about him. And he's not off the deep end like Antonio Brown has been. First of all, side note, why was Antonio Brown having a silver mustache for a while? I don't understand what Mr. Big Chest was doing. Mr. Big Chest was doing. That said, Odell is still immensely talented, so they got him in there. And look, the Browns don't care about that other stuff. If they did, they wouldn't have signed Kareem Hunt. Remember?
Okay. Yeah.
Who's got the domestic violence charges against him, and he has to sit out this year. They signed him to the one-year deal after KC released him. Look, this is what I expected. I've been waiting on OBJ to rant about his former team, the Giants, the organization, the fan base, and that's, you know, what he did today in an epic Twitter rant. Like, he went on, someone tweeted at him, "Stop crying, you loser. There's no reason to go after a Class A franchise because you are a locker room cancer and they realized they needed to change the culture. Grow up and show a little maturity for the first time in your career. Hashtag overrated." Of course, OBJ did not take kindly to that.
Yeah. I mean, is this a person who's actually a Giants fan? I'm like, my goodness, a Class A franchise wouldn't have benched Eli Manning like a couple years ago, you know?
Yeah, and his response was, "As any one of my teammates of who I was as a teammate and a man and a person. Yes, I'm cancer to a place that's okay with losing because I want to win that bad." All uppercase. You're absolutely correct. So, it's an epic Twitter rant. He just went on and on and back and forth with fans and everything like that. You're just asking for it when the trolls come out.
Yeah.
I do think OBJ is a little sensitive sometimes, though. Like, just don't care about that stuff, dude. Just let it roll off your back. You are one of the top three wide receivers in the league. You're one of the top 10 position players, period, in the entire NFL. Why are you caring what people say on social media?
Exactly.
But I think it's a generational thing. Yep. OBJ, Kevin Durant in the NBA, it's all kind of the same. It's just like, dude, just block out the noise. You're getting paid a lot of money to play a game, and you're the best at what you do. Who cares what anyone's got to say?
When did LSU like head coaches get into the building? Because, I mean, you just brought out the block out the noise drop like everybody else. Oh, Will Wade, Coach O.
There it is.
It was just straight. I think you just took that straight out. I'm surprised we didn't hear that from Scott Woodward during his press conference, which I'm sure we'll be talking about ad nauseum on today's show. We've already done it in the first hour of the show. But, you know, I want to kind of flip things over. We're talking about the NFL, Odell Beckham Jr. Well, looks like the Seattle Seahawks and the Chiefs did a little trade around, and it means Frank Clark heading to the Kansas City Chiefs. And it's a much-needed step in the right direction for a franchise that needs defensive players.
I don't understand either one of these teams. Now, obviously, I am not running an NFL franchise anytime soon, but I have questions. The Chiefs, yes, they were not very good on defense. They were actually atrocious on defense last year. But they got rid of some of their better players, including Dee Ford, in the offseason. And in the offseason, then they turn around and sign Honey Badger to a big, huge contract, the largest contract for a safety. Deservingly so, Honey Badger can play, okay? But then they trade away their first round pick, and I want to say a second, to get Frank Clark from the Seahawks, and then turned around and gave him a 5-year, $105.5 million deal, which includes $63.5 million guarantee. I ask you, world famous, did you even know who Frank Clark was before today?
No, I did not.
And he's getting a $105 million deal.
But apparently,
$63.5 million guarantee.
Apparently, when I saw the notifications, like Bleach Report was calling him a franchise player, I'm like, I didn't know this dude existed before. I couldn't tell this dude from him and a man on the moon.
So this cat just got a $105 million deal, $63.5 million guaranteed. So, okay, good for him. He gets his money. God bless.
Yeah. It's amazing.
But are the Seahawks in just full-on rebuild mode now? They signed Russell Wilson to the largest contract per year in the NFL, their franchise quarterback. And who does he have to throw the ball to? Who's running the ball there? And who the hell's playing defense in Seattle now? So, I mean, are they trying to do a quick rebuild by getting up all these picks? I have no idea. I have no idea what they're doing. And look, not to knock Clark.
Yeah.
Okay. He's had 33 sacks since 2016, but he's played in Seattle, so no one knows about
it. Yep.
Okay, so that's to be fair. He is a good player, and if he gets his money, that's fine. But I don't know what the Seahawks, I don't know what they're doing. You know, they signed Russell Wilson to that $140 million contract extension, but is there enough players on the roster for Seattle to be a viable NFL playoff team again? I don't know. Dealing away your franchise defensive player and letting Earl Thomas walk as well? I don't know. Legion of Boom days are long gone now.
I guess you could say the Legion of Boom is going out with a whimper.
Say that again?
The Legion of Boom is going out with a whimper there.
Yeah, it just tailspin. A lot of those guys got poached off, but now I don't know. But look, interesting. Interesting that this happened right before the draft. Obviously, Kansas City views themselves of going to the AFC Championship game, losing a heartbreaker to the Patriots as they did last year. They probably view themselves retooling the defense. We need to add guys right now to win right now while we got Patrick Mahomes on that very friendly rookie deal that he's still on, a la what Seattle did with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, last one here, Raymond, real quick. The NCAA Rules Committee met today and approved some rule changes for the 2019 season. The two big ones I think LSU fans are all too familiar with, including targeting. It's going to be a progressive penalty now, meaning that players who commit three targeting fouls in the same season could receive a one-game suspension instead of, you know, at the end of the half, in the second half.
But the penalty is so damn subjective anyway, as we saw last year with Devin White.
Yeah, but like I said, it's a lot better because you don't have to deal with the potential suspension. If it happens in the second half, it gets suspended for the first half of the next game. It's all about, it builds up. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
And then the other one is about the overtime game. And again, another thing LSU fans are all too familiar with, and that is about after the fifth overtime, teams will no longer trade off starts at the opponent's respective 25-yard line. Instead, they'll be running alternate two-point conversions until a winner is determined. Basically, it sounds a lot like a shootout version of football.
I don't know how I feel about that, because I love when a college football game is like 72-70. So if you're telling me now,
You pound the over every time.
Of course, of course. What was that Ole Miss Arkansas game was ridiculous too back in the day. I don't know. I think it's a step in the right direction because it does get kind of repetitive over and over again from the 20 or 25 yard line. You get to a point you're like, okay, enough is enough.
Just
make a
2-point
conversion, which is difficult to do.
Yep.
That's why they incorporated that as a rule into overtime to begin with. After you get past so many overtimes, I think, what is it, two, Clint? After you get past two overtimes in college, then you have to go to the two-point conversion for the third.
After the third one. So now it makes it a shootout, basically, after the fifth overtime, which I think is cool.
So that could be cool. All right, yeah.
It's a rare occurrence, but, you know.
Yeah, but I still, the targeting thing. Yeah, they made it a little bit better, but how about you actually explain to your refs what targeting really is?
You're targeting, Raymond.
I'm targeting the NCAA. Thank you. When we come back here, we're going to target some more LSU, new athletic director talk with our next guest from Tiger Details, the one and only Ron Higgins will be joining us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local, 103.7 The Game.
Thomas Wolfe once said that you can't go home again. but clearly they've never been to Baton Rouge. After stops in Washington and Texas, I'm back home.
That was Scott Woodward, the new athletic director at Louisiana State University. You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show with guest host Raymond Parse III here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now to head back out to the ArtCo Equipment Hotline and welcome on our second guest for today. He is the accomplished sports reporter for TigerDetails.com, the one and only Ron Higgins. Ron, how are you doing this afternoon, brother?
How you doing, Ray? Good?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. So it was a packed house there at the Manship School today. I know you were there, so wanted to get your thoughts on it. I was not prepared listening to the broadcast of the press conference live. I was not anticipating a Wolf literary reference, Buddy Romer shout-out as well. We got everything there from the presser today, brother. What were your thoughts, your initial thoughts that stood out to you from the press conference today?
He even had a BB even quoted a BB King lyric,
yeah,
involving his mother. I mean, it was like a little bit of Dale Brown reincarnation there. Dale would quote everybody from Gandhi to Hitler. My impression was, I'm kind of stunned they hired the right guy. I mean the exact right guy, a guy with a skill set specifically that fits LSU. And what I mean by that is his background in politics and his way to he managed Buddy Romer. He'd been involved in politics. James Carville was a mentor to him. And the LSU hired him to deal with the legislature when he was hired by Mark Emmert in external affairs. That skill set right there combined with the skill set he picked up as an athletic director of Washington, Texas A&M. I mean, for LSU, I don't know anywhere else where the politics is so involved in the school and vice versa. And I just think it's, from that aspect, it's pretty perfect. Just like when Mike Sly was hired by the SEC, he became what I thought was the best commissioner in league history because he had a skill set that fit the league that nobody else had ever had. Mike had been a commissioner, an assistant commissioner. He'd been a judge. He'd been a lawyer. He had a law firm defending schools from NCAA probation. He knew the inside and outs of law and NCAA. When you're the commissioner of the SEC, you really need to know both those inside and out. The same thing here with Scott Woodward. He understands the politics of Louisiana. He knows who runs what, who he needs to talk to. And he has the athletic background of some of the great hires he's made at both places he's at. Hired Chris Peterson away from Boise State to Washington, the football coach. And for years, people tried to get him away from Boise State, and Woodward did it. And then it takes him in. You know, he hires Jimbo to replace Kevin Sumlin. And that was just a great move. Then made the basketball hire recently. So this is a guy who's not afraid to make a decision, but also a guy who listens and does his homework and does pretty thorough about what he does. But he's not afraid to make a decision on things. And he's also somebody who's very connected with, understands the fan base and stuff like that. So I think it's just I'm still stunned they got the best guy possible.
We're talking to Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com. Ron, and that's the thing I want to kind of elaborate a little bit further on is, you know, you mentioned that they hired the best guy possible, and he's known, this guy that they're hiring, is known for getting the best coaches possible at his previous two locations. Now, look, as it stands right now, there's no one that needs to be hired, right? We think the Will Wade situation is under control, that there's going to be nothing there, but that could change. We know how this works with the NCAA. That said, Nikki Vargas could be a possibility maybe after next season. I would assume that Scott's going to let her give herself a year to prove and if he's going to make a change there. So there's nothing for him to do right off the bat. But, you know, he mentioned today some of his early steps as the new AD, and it's all about listening. He kept bringing that up during the press conference about listening, and that was a knock on Joe Oliva. Not, he wasn't doing that himself, but that was a knock that a lot of fans and media people had about Joe was he didn't listen. He closed himself off. I got the impression from today's presser it's all about open door and it's all about listening with Scott.
Yeah, he wants to, I mean, he wants to hear all sides of the situation and anything he's trying to, you know, learn about. You know, the Will thing, he doesn't know much about that yet. He will. Will Wade coach next year at LSU? I don't know. I can't tell you that yet. I can't tell you what NCAA is going to do. I also can't tell you what Scott's going to do if once he learns all the information about it. But I do know that he's a guy who does look at everything very carefully and listens to a lot of people before he makes a decision. And a lot of times he's really good at, when people are on the opposite sides of the fence, he's good at bringing them all to the middle of the table to agree on one thing, which is also a trait that Blake Slide had, which was really good. So I just think I think there's nothing, you know, done right now. But I think every coach at LSU knows, and they know, no matter who is AD, that you've got to win to stay employed. And that's pretty the bottom line of it. And all of them know that. And I agree with your assessment of who probably needs to step it up. I mean, I think, you know, women's basketball definitely needs to step it up. That'd be the first thing you probably look at. Everything else right now is okay. But men's basketball is still iffy because of the NCAA. Will they come back and look at LSU basketball after the federal stuff is finished? Maybe so, maybe not. So we'll see what happens.
Ron, one of the things I found interesting is the way he said he viewed this job. And he said he viewed the job like an executive producer rather than a leader. What did you think about that?
Well, I think he makes the decisions in the end, but I think he tries to – he realizes everybody has their roles and parts they play, and it's his job to kind of put them in the best position to perform their best. And, you know, eventually, if they're not performing their best, he'll have to make the decision to find somebody else he feels he can perform the best. I think his job is to give his coaches the best opportunity to succeed, his athletes the best opportunity to succeed, but also not be afraid to do the things required when changes need to be made. I think he's proven that everywhere he's been.
We're talking to Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com. Ron, what was something that surprised you about the presser? I mean, you've known this guy a little bit. You've known of him. You kind of know the people around him. You were there covering LSU back in the day when he was associated with them. So I was assuming nothing really stunned you, but did something surprise you from today's presser?
I've never seen somebody so relaxed at a press conference. It's just like he walked into a reunion and he hadn't, you know, a 10-year reunion or 20-year reunion. He was walking and picked up the conversation where he left off when he, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. I just found him incredibly relaxed. And just kind of like you're stepping back into an old shoe, like putting back a comfortable pair of shoes on. A little more experienced putting those shoes on, but I think he's very happy about where he is. And I think it's really good for him in the sense that he went away from LSU and came back. A lot of times if you're one place the whole time, you don't see the big picture from the outside world. You don't see different things or experience the way things are done in different conferences as he did with the Pac-12 and you know, and then came back to the SEC with A&M. So he's been to other places. He's seen how it's done other places. And I think that's good. I think everybody needs to get away from their comfort zone and step outside it and learn things and then come back and apply them. I think that's a bonus, too.
Ron, one of the things, we'll wrap it up with this, brother. One of the things that also stood out to me listening to the presser today was, you and I have talked about this on the air before, is, you know, the game day experience has been lacking there around LSU, and that's been a big knock by a lot of people. You know, look, you're always going to have your people that are going to come tailgate. They're going to have a good time regardless of what's going on in and around the stadium. Those people are going to be taken care of. But a lot of people are like, hey, things are changing. We need to have more incentives to come to Tiger Stadium. That's just the culture we live in these days. That's where everything is trending towards. And a lot of the knock is the game day experience is not great. He addressed that, and I was surprised by that, but he addressed that. Were you surprised by that, or did you think, hey, this is a guy that's probably going to try to improve game day experiences here at LSU?
I think he understands. I mean, like he talked about, you know, he understands that game day experiences are different for different people. He understands the way that he always had a game day experience of being there all day, you know, and tailgating is sometimes different from what students are doing. And so I think he can look at all sides of it. I think he definitely wants to make it better. Because he's pretty open to anything, and he really is. He wants to everybody to enjoy LSU sports, to the people who play it, the coaches who coach it, and the fans who watch it. But most of all, he wants to win, too. he wants to win. You know, as he said, he goes, you know, if we're not rowing the boat in this direction, meaning the same direction, we're going to get our butts kicked in Tuscaloosa. We're going to get our butts kicked in Opelika. We're going to get our butts kicked in Gainesville. And trust me, I have no intention of doing that. So I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that we're rowing this thing in the right direction. He's very competitive, and I think that's the bottom line. You know, he understands he wants to win, too, badly.
And once again, it was one of the more entertaining pressers that I've listened to, Ron, because not only did we get James Carville reference, Buddy Romer, Thomas Wolfe, B.B. King, and then Opelika. So all in all,
yeah,
it was kind of a tremendous day. Brother, I appreciate you. I know you're swamped right now, but I appreciate you carving out some time for us, Ron, and keep up the good work there at TigerDetails.com, brother.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's Ron Higgins, TigerDetails.com. Go check out his work. When we come back here on the Jordy Holtberg Show with guest hosts, Raymond Parts III, we'll wrap up today's show and get you prepared, geared up for the good brother Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, which will begin at 4 o'clock right here on 103.7 The Game.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show. I'm your guest host, Raymond Parch III. Right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. The good brother himself, Ben Love, is coming up next with Bumper to Bumper Sports. You got to make sure to tune in for that. He's got a hell of an interview right off the bat there at 4:05 that you're going to want to stay tuned for. But before we wrap up today's show, time to give a little love to the Raging Cajuns here at UL. They have moved up officially to number 8 in the national polls, highest ranking of the season for the softball team, who wrapped up another undefeated week, their fourth consecutive, and they claimed the regular season conference championship over the weekend. The UL Raging Cajun softball team is at La Tech tomorrow night before coming back home for senior weekend versus Coastal Carolina with a 3-game set Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Also of note, Summer Ellison, by the way, in case you didn't know, she's good. That's the best way to say it. For the third consecutive week and the sixth time overall in the 2019 season, UL pitcher and former Terlings Catholic star Summer Ellison has been named the Community Coffee Sunbelt Conference Pitcher of the Week. Over four starts last week, she averaged two strikeouts per inning, tallying at least seven each time and reaching double digits twice. She also surpassed the 500 career K mark over the weekend as well. So congratulations to the UL Raging Cajun softball team for keeping it going in the right direction. They sure do look like a team that may be headed to Oklahoma for the College World Series. Well, it's that time of the day for your daily history lesson. That's right. I'm going to mix it up a bit. World famous. Are you ready for this? I'm going with today's famous birthdays first instead of today in sports history. I hope you're prepared for this. I got the thumbs up. If you were born on this date, April 23rd, you share a birthday with Julius Caesar Scaligera, Italian-French physician and scholar. He was born in 1484. I'm sure you're well-versed in what he has done. Also, William Shakespeare. That's right. He was born on this date in 1564. William Penn, English admiral and politician, also the father of the founder of the province of Pennsylvania, was born in 1621. How about something more recently? That's what you're asking me? I can give it to you. James Buchanan, the 15th U.S. president, was born on this date in 1791. Also born on this date, April 23rd, was the one and only Claude Carter, South African cricketer. That's right. So sports knowledge there. That's that next level stuff I'm providing for you there, world famous Clint D, who's in the process of ignoring me.
I'm just waiting for you to get to like this, like the last two centuries in terms of like on this
come
days.
On, dude. Come on. Okay. All right. I guess I can be, you know, a little bit closer to what people actually know, right? Okay. That's what we do. Lee Miller, American photographer and a correspondent for Vogue during World War II. He was born on this date in 1907. I'm trying, world famous. I'm trying to give you some. Oh, here's one. Bud Wilkinson.
That's not bad.
That's right. Famous football coach at Oklahoma. He was born on this date in 1916. And I believe that's all I got for you, man. That's all I got for. Oh, no. Sorry. Warren Spahn. Great southpaw pitcher for both the Boston and the Milwaukee Braves.
Yep.
He was born on this date in 19.
That's a good one.
21. And also in 1928. Shirley Temple was born on this date.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what I'm bringing to the table, world famous. Did you appreciate me mixing it up there for you, bro?
I appreciate you mixing it up a little bit there. what we got in terms of on this day in sports history? Because definitely I think it was a pretty relevant day, because on this day in 1989, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played his last game as a Los Angeles Laker.
I remember that. Did you also know on this date in 1939, world famous, Ted Williams hit his first home run, the best swing considered by Benny to have the greatest swing in baseball history, Teddy Ballgame. First home run, 1939.
And 1954 on this day, Hank Aaron hit the first of his 755 home runs. So a couple firsts and one last on
Mobile
this
native,
day.
By the way. Mobile native, just a second.
Yeah. There we go. Weird flex, but okay.
Oh, there it is. Oh, that's
you were just
right.
Even waiting for that all show long, haven't you? I don't normally get to break it out.
I'm
much.
A diehard Braves fan, and I'm from Mobile. We love.
No, I'm just saying. You just love when I bring up the weird flex. But okay,
Nolan Ryan on this date in 1989, brother.
Was it when he put the dude in the headlock?
No.
Damn it!
No,
it's meaningless then.
Wasn't that Robin Ventura?
Yeah, Robin Ventura.
Yeah, Robin Ventura.
The greatest
struggle.
Moment of all time.
Yeah, that's what Ventura will be known for the rest of his life. Yeah, 1989, Nolan Ryan threw a no-hitter. One of many that he threw in his life. Oh, and more recent, this will be great for this week, world famous, as well.
Okay,
we'll wrap it up
go
with.
Ahead.
On this day in 2005, University of Utah quarterback Alex Smith was selected number one overall by the San Francisco 49ers.
A former Ute.
That's right, who took him over Aaron Rodgers, who famously fell in the green room to the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, what a time.
Well, I appreciate Craig for calling in. Appreciate you, world-famous CD, for producing this show. And thanks for everyone for listening. The good brother Ben Love is up next with Bumper to Bumper Sports right here on 103.7 The Game.